This here podcast contains strong language and is not suitable for young listeners, workplace environments, or people of delicate constitution.
Which option you would prefer to engage in the most?
You're listening to FatCast. We've upped our game. Up yours.
All right, welcome to the FatCast. This is Engineer Al, and I am here again to bring you part two of the WBC Special Edition. This episode features interviews with two of the most important people in the hobby gaming industry. First up is Zev Schlesinger, the man who put the Z in Z-Man Games, followed by a great interview with Stephen Bonacore, who owns Stronghold Games. So, let's go right to the floor of the Open Gaming Room at WBC with Matt and Josh and Sag joining with Zev to talk about, well, just about everything. Have fun.
So finally,
at long last.
At long last.
The interview you've all been waiting for.
All of you.
The one and only.
All four of you.
The one and only Z-Man.
Readership group.
Yeah, exactly. We doubled our
listenership since last year.
My mom and my grandmother now are checking it out. So we got Zev here.
Yep.
But yeah, so hot new stuff coming out from Z-Man.
Tell us about it.
The Agricola two-player donkey expansion.
Yes, the animals expansion. I don't think we have donkeys in
It's standalone,
but it is
though, right?
It is standalone.
It's not an
expansion. No, it's not an expansion. It's a two-player version.
Oh.
It just focuses on the animal breeding and stabling and stuff.
That sounds kind of
foul.
That's kind of foul. Does it come with video or is it just cards?
Agricola horse cocks.
How much you want to pay for the addition? I'll stretch a goal in and I'll add whatever you want.
Not available in all countries.
You got to do the flying frog style production where you
photos
of like horse dicks and like, you know, it's like your friend's horse dicks. Like,
it's not easy having those horses stand still for those shots, man.
Well, you feed them an apple. That's the trick.
Oh, there you go.
You got to feed them an apple.
Two man job. Feed, one to go
in. One to take a picture.
Wow.
It's hard work.
I don't know which one's got the harder job.
Yep. You know, it takes a village to raise a horse.
Right? So aside from Agricola, the Horse Masturbator Edition, Clash of Cultures is coming out.
We got Clash of Cultures. We're hoping to have some for Essen.
Yep.
Otherwise, probably November. December, hopefully, the latest.
For those of us who don't work for the company, what is a Clash of Cultures?
That's our Civ game. Possibly the holy grail of Civ game, but I didn't say that.
I mean, you know what?
But wow. I
think it's a great Civ game.
I play tested the hell out of it, and I can attest to that it is a really solid game.
Yes. Is it a cooperative game that plays in 40 minutes?
Yes.
No.
Look, man, I'm just trying to sell you games, Zev. I'm just trying to sell you games.
That's what it takes for you to buy it. Yes.
Lie.
For
outright,
other
just
people,
fucking lie.
No.
It's kind of like Pandemic meets Agricola.
80% of the horse cock, 40% of the effort.
I think you've managed to lower the standard of this show.
There it is.
Would that have been done?
I think that's the first time you've managed to
All it took was Zev.
Hey, they're pretty big. It's hard to get it in there.
See what kind of guest I am?
You're going to need a coffin box for that one.
Hit
the fantasy coffin.
The first
Z-Man coffin box.
No insert.
Well, there's an insert.
Well, not the tray insert. There's no room there. Wow.
So what else?
That would be a first, yes.
Yeah, it would.
But it is a Civ game, yeah. It plays roughly in about 2 hours. You don't play a particular civilization. You're a generic civilization whose abilities grow as you increase your technology tree, take over cities, build cities, and so on and so forth.
Here's the important question.
Yes.
Do you build a wonder?
Yes, you can build a wonder.
You can build a wonder.
Absolutely.
And it is a Civ game.
Can you also tell me about the pieces? You were telling us about that earlier today. This is awesome.
The plastic bit. The cities, basically, when you put it together, it starts out with a round settlement piece, and all the other city pieces you can buy, temples, ports, and so on, can go around this centerpiece. So basically, they have like curved bases. So when the city is done, it looks like a big sprawling city.
So you're actually building,
and you have that visual arc of it growing and becoming, looking like a, a major city.
That's pretty cool.
Yeah,
right.
I think so. I think so.
So what's driving it? I mean, is this card playing? Is this card playing?
For battles, you can use cards to enhance modified battles. You can also use cards for VPs. So when you do something, you know, oh, I conquered an army that was bigger than mine.
Right.
Oh, look, I got a card that said Great Army. You're also building wonders. You're getting VPs also for building your cities and stuff, or the city pieces, and also the technology tree. You're growing that.
The tech tree is absolutely fantastic.
Yeah, you can go online and see a picture of the placard.
I mean, like, the user interface for this game with the tech is brilliant. Absolutely brilliant. Probably the best tech tree I've ever seen in the game.
That's awesome.
And you do have, like, happy cities, angry cities, and that affects what things you can do.
Unrest. Yeah.
You can even get religion.
Unrest,
yep. So you can get dogma, monotheism. You can do
different
governments, different religions.
That's awesome.
Do you choose to walk,
or are these
that
things
is
that
the
are coming
path.
In?
No, you choose. You,
how long so, How long is the playtime looking, generally speaking?
2 hours.
2 hours to 2.5. I'd say.
Yeah.
Do you think that it being as short as it is, you lose some of the feel of I'm building a civilization?
It doesn't go
that's
to modern times.
It's supposed to take
times.
More than, you know.
Right. It doesn't go to modern.
Yeah, it doesn't go to modern times.
And I think it has a good story arc in
so
that.
So you feel like you're, like, you feel kind of epic.
Yes.
You know?
Yep.
It's a tight window.
Correct.
A lot of games try to do this, like, pared down time, and you lose 7 wonders. You're not building a fucking civilization in 20 minutes.
No, you're not.
With the piss boy.
That's an abstraction.
Yeah,
right.
No, exactly. But, it has, but
this
it still
one
has
definitely
that
feel. Has
to understate it.
But it's also a visual feel.
Right.
It's a visual arc. Like I said, you see the city
growing.
You see the tiles, you know, the exploration, the stuff like that. So I think you definitely have a visual arc.
Combat's really fun, too.
Combat is easy in that, and there is combat.
I will say that this is, for our audience, this is the A-tiers civilization game.
So you had a wonderful day today, huh? Great week. Capped off a great week.
Yeah, great week.
I'm not even being sarcastic, because you saw me, so it was a great week.
That's true, yes, that's right.
I had a fabulous week.
But you know what? I'm at WBC, and I'm having a great time, so yeah, it is a great week.
Exactly. The front of Zev's car got ripped off. Basically.
Yeah,
well,
so when
you pull, Rolls Royces have really long fronts, so you're pulling out, it's really hard to see, and you know, you're counting your money while you're driving, it's a dangerous situation.
James couldn't see what was going on as he was driving.
Exactly, I mean, Zeb's in the back just counting money, I mean, it's not, you know.
Yeah, James was asking me, shall we buy Dunkin' Donuts, or just stop there for a nice coffee?
Right.
And while I was pondering, we got hit. And
Zev also tripped over his wallet into a racquetball earlier in the week.
I didn't get hit by the Bentley car door.
Yeah. Yeah, I didn't get hit myself.
So pinball.
Pinball.
Zev's a pinball aficionado.
I love pinball.
Much like Josh Look and myself.
Yes.
Me too.
And
Al
too.
Love it.
You're
in
a pinball too?
Oh, that's awesome.
All right, so here we go. Debate. We talked about this at Avery Fest.
Yep. Favorite pinball tables.
You don't have to go number one. You don't have to go necessarily number one.
There's a few
different elements that, you know, you go back and forth, whatever, but top few.
Well, my first one is Black Knight.
That's it. You guys are fucking old.
I know.
But yeah, that's my number
so
one.
Black
number one
it.
Is Black Knight.
Black Knight.
Okay.
Right. Absolutely.
What else? What else
is fun?
I like Twilight Zone.
I also do not like Twilight Zone.
Man, what? They got different.
I'm not very good at Twilight
there.
Zone.
I think Twilight Zone is too tight. I do not like the playfield. I think the playfield is too crowded, really low.
Okay.
That whole section to the left side there, I think
it's
awesome. Little,
with
it's a
the
little,
magnet and
I think there's just a little too much going on. I love Adam's Family.
Adam's Family's nice. I'm a big fan of Adam's Family.
Medieval Madness.
That's a lot of
I
fun.
I think
those ogres.
Medieval Madness has probably become my favorite pinball.
The Lord of the Rings table is really fucking good. It's hard for me to accurately assess Lord of the Rings because, like, while I think it's a great table, I'm definitely swayed by the theme. You know, because it's I mean, it's a beautiful table, which adds to it.
Lord of the Rings just begs for a pinball game.
It's a perfect game.
You know,
Indiana Jones is fabulous.
If you guys ever see, I think there was a pinball game called Middle Earth, and it was like, I think so.
I've never seen it.
It's double the width of a regular pinball machine.
Oh, so it's like a super wide.
It's like a super, super wide.
It's like that, the Space Invaders knockoff. You seen that one?
Oh, no, I didn't see that one.
There's like, it's a 70s table, but it's super, super wide. You got two sets of fucking flippers, but it's two sets wide. It's not two sets like above, you know, not going to Adam's Family.
I'll tell you another pin that, you know, especially if you're for board gamers, Safecracker.
Yeah, you've been telling
us
about
this.
Safecracker, it's a smaller pin. It's amazing. And what's cool about it is the back glass is actually like a board game. It's like a roll and move kind of thing. Your ball hits, you get points, and you're trying to break the bank. And the other cool part is at certain points, and if you do certain things, the back glass dispenses a collectible coin down the field. on the outside. So it comes out of the back glass,
and it lands
like right on your lap, or if you're standing between your legs, whatever, it just falls there, and there are 20 collectible coins in that game. It's it's wonderful, man. Break it. And if you break the bank, they just keep coming out. Ding, ding, ding. And it rolls down.
And
it is a great game. I believe it was designed by this guy, Pat Lawler or something.
Pat Lawler, yeah.
He's the guy that does
He did Mini Madness, I guess.
Yeah. He's the famous guy.
Well, him and Steve Ritchie. Steve Ritchie's the other, I think, the other big name.
But I go, check out Safecracker if you can. I think that's just a fantastic
Steve Ritchie,
game.
Speaking of plugging another podcast, you guys got to check out the A Life Well Wasted. It's like six episodes. It's primarily about video games, but he does one episode that's basically a super long, awesome interview with Steve Ritchie.
Nice.
And he just talks about doing Black Knight, and he talks about doing Black Knight 2000. It's you guys would love it. Absolutely love it.
All right.
It's really well done.
Say that name again.
A Life Well Wasted. It is the best podcast I've ever heard.
All right.
It is a professional, like, it sounds right, like you guys ever listen to Radio Lab?
Yeah.
You guys ever hear Radio Lab on NPR?
Yeah.
It's like that level of editing and all kinds of sound effects and
it's
lots and lots
anything
of little cuts.
All right.
It's fucking incredible.
A Life Well Wasted.
All and right. he did, I think, seven episodes.
All right, but I'll find that one, though.
But the Steve Ritchie one is just awesome.
They're all great. The thing is, they're all great, even if you don't really love video games, because they're just interesting stories. But they're just interesting stories, really well told, really interesting, really it's about like design stuff, and I mean it's that higher level kind of thing. I mean it's incredible.
Wait, is this
show.
Guy he was a video guy before?
He was a video game journalist.
Oh, a journalist. Okay, all right. So and he had the inside on
video
some
game journalist.
Yeah, yeah.
That's an actual job too.
Yeah,
that's a big
yeah,
thing.
Yes, it's the 80s, man. Come on, you know how much money video games? Listen, we're here at fucking WBC. Do you know how many people are at E3?
Yeah.
You know how many people show up to PAX?
PAX, yes. That is true, man.
That's
an industry that can afford the journalist.
Yeah.
Yeah, those are the people that actually do have people driving them around.
Yes, that's the industry.
Oh, fuck yeah.
That is true.
We are small potatoes.
I did, but you know what? I'm okay with that.
Hey, the development costs are considerably lower.
Absolutely.
The barrier to entry is a little different.
And a lot less stress, I think. A lot less stress. Good stuff.
Definitely. So I should have other things to talk about.
We can always catch up another time.
We're over at Zev.
Yeah.
No.
That's you two guys.
Who do you hate, Zev? Who's the worst publisher in board games?
Yeah, right. I'm going to answer that.
So you've got one in mind, is what you're saying.
No, actually, honestly, you know what? No, I don't think anybody comes into the business thinking, I want to screw my customers and do things really, really badly.
Well, come on.
Games Workshop.
Come on. We all know Steve Bonacore. Come on.
Well,
that Wall Street jerk.
Yep.
We're going to recommend him. Steve, man, we spoke about you so much. You got to listen to this podcast, man. He's not
going to
be happy.
He's trying to Bernie Madoff your money.
At this point, he damn well better get out.
Steve does listen to the podcast. I was surprised he's one of the only people. He knows about the podcast.
He's one of the only people out there.
Yeah. Yeah. He's not the only one. I subscribe.
What the hell is he supposed to do on the draft in New York?
Right.
Well, when he's busy counting other people's money, I mean, he's got to stay entertained.
Well, yeah, no, but honestly, I can't imagine a publisher really doing that. You know, it just seems silly.
No, I agree. I agree.
I can't imagine that.
Yeah, if you're not on board,
and they may do it accidentally because they don't know what they're doing. That's something else. But to say, I'm getting in this business, that's crazy.
You get a quick buck. It ain't happening.
So it's been about a year. How do you like, I mean, are you loving life since you sold the company?
Man.
I mean, you think it's, do you appreciate the freedom? Or are you chafing a little bit under the... The stresses.
No stress, man.
You don't get to do whatever you want anymore, you know?
I mean, yeah, that's still a little tough, but I do have a lot of freedom, and I do appreciate that. And, you know, the guy, you know, everyone else is open, and they want me to find stuff, and I am, and that's what I do. Basically, I find stuff, I kick it up to them. You know, I give my reasons why I think they should do it, and then it's up to them. Yeah, if they say no to something, okay, it might be a little like, okay, I would have done it, but that comes with the territory, because everything else is... Really fantastic. You know, I'm enjoying it. I don't have to deal with the day-to-day stress.
It's awesome.
Which, you know, and and I go to shows, too. So
yeah, you get to hang out.
So you get to hang out.
Hang out with jerks like us.
Yep.
Yeah, and prototypes.
And pay for us.
Exactly.
How many prototypes do you look at this week?
I don't know. I think I'm up to five already or something. So, yeah, I just finished one now. Now, actually, I'm going to sit down and play a game of Tichu, which I love. It's usually my convention go-to game.
You know what,
game.
Man? I've never played Tichu.
It's good.
Great game.
It's good.
Game. Yeah, really great game.
I want it.
If you like trick-taking games, you don't like trick-taking games, don't bother.
Never really played trick-taking games.
It's more of a ladder.
So
I mean, it's a ladder trick-taking.
I want to crack into it.
No, it's not really a straight trick-taking.
No, it's it has a little twist here and there. But it's so much fun.
Yeah, because you can go around a table a couple times.
Yeah.
Correct. Correct. It's not a one-pass kind of thing, but it's a lot. It's still.
Oh, it's a great game. Great game. Don't get me wrong. I love it. It's a great game. We need a Watto game. That's what you really need. Watto.
Yeah.
Character.
Yep.
Yeah, you love that character.
I love Watto.
I know that.
Watto's great in everything but Star Wars.
I'll put him in, what do you call it, some new economic game or something.
Yeah.
There's a bunch of them out there.
It's another racist!
It's in
the Watto game!
So, many years ago, I traded some games for a Darth Maul lightsaber, the two that connect to each other.
Right. Oh, yeah.
I had it in a box for 5, 6, 7 years. So finally, right, I get in my basement, new place. I said, you know what? I'm pulling this saber out. I put it together, and I put it on the stand. It rolled off the stand, fell behind my book shelves, and cracked.
Oh, man.
And I can't put it back together again. So now I have two separate sabers that will not connect and become that lightsaber spear thingy.
Bummer.
That's
a drag.
The day I opened it.
It's a miracle he didn't kill himself.
Whatever, Zeb.
I was too out of it.
Listen,
I was
listen,
so upset,
listen Zeb.
Man.
You can hire, like, Ray Park, whatever, to come to your fucking house now and, like,
teach you how to
in your
use
pool
it.
And teach you how to fight with a lightsaber.
Dude, I could. You know what? I was in Disney World vacationing. He was there. They had the Darth Maul, and they did a whole Star Wars thing, and I couldn't get his autograph because you had to get a pass, and it was sold out like 7 that morning or 8 that morning. So I just stood around taking pictures while everyone was online. I was like, hey, look at that. I don't know who you are, but hey, Ray. Yeah, boom, boom, boom.
Didn't you say, don't you know
I met
who
the
I
guy
am.
Who played Jango Fett. I met the guy who played Jango Fett. He's
really?
A complete dick.
Really, like, has he done anything else?
No.
Okay, well.
He's the voice of, like, every clone trooper now. You know, so, yeah, he got a big deal out of it. But the guy who played Boba Fett was actually really cool. It's really weird to find out he's actually a sweet, mild-mannered Englishman.
At Dragon Con, one time, like, 96, 7, or 8, something like, I met Dave Prowse, Peter Mayhew, Boba Fett
really
guy. I don't remember
too.
His name.
Peter Mayhew was in
the
Comic-Con
R2 Keith Baker,
yep.
Stuff like that. It was great.
Peter Mayhew was in New York Comic Con this year.
Oh, he does a lot of shows.
He did not look well.
He's been
I felt really bad.
He's
on
Kane, right? He's got the Kane.
I felt really bad that he, like, had to be there. It was kind of depressing because it was like, this dude should not be fucking signing autographs in a back alley at Comic-Con.
I know.
Like, he should be fucking retired and enjoying life. He was Chewbacca, like, somebody fucking pony.
Same guy like Richard Kiel, the guy played Jaws. I mean, he had to sit him in a chair because he couldn't even stand under his own weight.
You know, like, Mark Hamill, that motherfucker, hustles like a motherfucker at those conventions.
Yep.
He gets $100 an autograph. He has a line. He works for
Does he have a comic also?
Well, he does the voice of Joker.
But he does a comic book.
Oh, yeah,
I think
he did
that. He was selling
like
$200-something dollars.
Yep.
He does a lot of voice work.
It's $100 an autograph. You stand in this line. He has a line. He fucking works it. We were next to him this year for Wizards of the Coast. He works it from 10 a.m. to 6 p.m. He just fucking signs.
$100 a pop.
$100 a pop. That dude
How many people do you think?
He must have ripped through 500 people.
Wow. Holy cow.
Fucking insane.
That is insane.
Fucking insane.
Wow.
And he was just banging them out. I mean, probably 200 people each day and then, you know, 100 people on Sunday or something. I mean, it was insane. There was a long line the entire day. 500 is probably a low estimate.
Probably low estimate. All right, I can believe
Stan Lee's like that too. Yeah, as old as he is, the man can still bump some people.
Yep.
I mean, it was insane to watch this happen. And he seemed like he was enjoying it. You know,
he wasn't healthy.
He was having fun. Yeah. You know, I mean, whatever. But
he was bantering with people.
Yeah. I mean, Chewbacca was not. He seemed like a nice guy. It just seemed like Chewbacca. Like, you don't need to do this anymore. Like, please, like, George Lucas, give this man enough money that he doesn't have to fucking degrade himself. Like,
oh man,
you know,
like speaking part.
They filmed it with speaking parts, which is really weird to see.
None of it went on, yeah.
If you watch them filming
he's smoking? Get me out of his costume, I'm dying?
No, he does not sound half bad. He's really delivering the line.
Yep.
He doesn't sound like James Earl Jones, but he doesn't sound half bad.
No, yeah, I'm sure he has a deep voice.
Yeah.
I'm sure of that.
Yeah.
He does look
he's got the English accent, though.
Yeah. Oh, yeah. Well, my favorite visual at Dragon Con, I told you I saw those guys. It was at the Hyatt lobby near the bar. They had a cocktail table. We had Peter Mayhew, Keith Baker, and Dave Prowse. So you have Dave Prowse sitting there, okay, pretty good. Peter Mayhew sitting there, but his legs were so long they had to like extend past the cocktail table. Yeah. And Keith Baker with his legs dangling on the chair. Man, I wish I had a camera. That was such a prize photo. But it's like the one thing at Dragon Con I'll always remember. Yeah. Great, great little scene, man. Huh. I miss that.
That's awesome. What a far-ranging conversation we've had.
Yeah.
Yes. That a far galaxy, right?
Yeah. It fits the spirit of the fort, though.
Exactly.
That's the spirit of the fort, was that conversation.
Because there's lots of things we like,
lots
right?
Of
we're multifaceted,
going on,
yep. Not just one thing.
The right. Murdery runs deep.
Yes, it does.
It's like our dicks.
That's why our little post is bigger than everyone else's in the table. We got these posts. all these tables at WBC have these like monolithic posts that says like experience player wanted or like hey check us out we're demoing this. But the Fortress Ameritrash one is like
enormous.
Yeah, it is the biggest post. It's like at least
tallest.
Yeah.
It's very erect.
It's double the size of all the.
Oh
all the
no,
other
it's
posts.
Steve Bonacore.
All right, Zev, you got to go now.
I got
some important show.
We
need a real publisher in here.
Yeah. Now, you know what? Because he drinks. That's why.
No,
that's why you guys like him.
No.
No,
I don't
think
that.
Thank you, Zev, for...
Hey, listen,
Zev. All right, guys. Take it easy, man.
Yeah, we'll see you tomorrow. We'll see you tonight. We're going to come watch you sleep later.
That's right. I'm going to get a third pillow, man.
We're here with Steve Bonacore of Stronghold Games. We're about to do a shot at tequila at WBC 2012.
Under protest.
Relatively late in the evening.
Under protest.
Steve Bonacore likes brunettes with big asses. Let's do this.
He's never said
boom!
That. He's never, ever said that. All right.
Stronghold.
Here's a shot. Thank you.
Steve, tell us about what is going on with Stronghold Games. Last year, you were here, and you had Survive.
Yeah.
You had...
Confusion.
Code 777?
Panic Station.
Panic Station was still in pre-production.
Yeah,
it was being kind of demoed.
That's right.
As was Core Worlds.
Yes.
So at the time, you had three games out. Now
right.
You have how many? Seven? Eight?
I now have eight games currently in print, and I'm doing 11. This one goes to 11. Doing 11 more games.
Wait, that was a bad English accent. Do that again.
This one goes to 11. I can do a very good English accent.
Steve Avery.
I don't know about that.
Suddenly feel a little bit better about your Italian accent.
So seriously, yeah, Stronghold Games is making a very, very big push into the market with, as I said, 11 more titles between now and the end of the year, all coming out by Essen. And we're moving in various directions.
We're actually 11 games between now and November.
That is right.
So in 2 months, you're putting out 11 games.
For Christmas. That's right. Would you like to hear them all?
Yes.
You might as well tell them all to your audience.
You're going the spaghetti strategy here.
Alphabetical.
I'm going to do them in release order. I think that's better.
This is like some Rain Man shit over here.
I know, it's hard. I feel like Zeb now did 45 in 1 year and he can name them all. I think it's amazing.
Yeah, but he hasn't played in like half of them.
Well, I can't describe that part. But right now in pre-order on our website, we don't kickstart, we produce games and then... You can order them immediately after they have been already printed. So, five games right now in pre-order. I have two small card games, Little Devils and Crazy Creatures of Dr. Gloom. These are nice small card games, $15 price point. So I'm going down to get the bottom end of the market for light games.
Those are English editions of already published.
Those are they're English editions of games that were done first in the Netherlands by White Goblin Games.
Yeah, yeah.
Very big co-publisher of ours. Those two games. I'm also doing two expansions for Revolver, the great Wild West themed shooter. So two expansions, that also $15. So we're moving into that lower end of the market so people can be very approachable for people to come in and grab these titles. And my first Euro game, I know how much you guys love Euro games, yes. Milestones.
Does it have horses in it?
It does not have horses in it.
Elephants.
That's why Zev didn't publish it, right?
Trust me, you want to say no to both of those.
We get really excited about horses and elephants.
With the great publisher, Eggert Spiele. Peter Eggert and I are now co-publishing Milestones. So I wanted to get into... So essentially what I'm doing here is...
Those are the five in pre-order. What else? You got six more.
Want to keep going?
I'll get them all out there.
I'll keep going if you like.
Let's hear them.
Then after that, we have some very exciting things. We have We have Crude the Oil Game, which is McMulty to some people, right? So, huge plastics game, 300 plastic pieces. Now, it is kind of Euro-y and economic-y kind of game.
What's the price point on that bad boy?
That bad boy is $69.95. So, that's my top end of the game.
Hey, yep. I like that.
About 300 plastic pieces in that game.
Steve Bonacore, 69s with big-ass brunettes.
I don't know what you're talking about.
Moving on.
Moving right on. No comment on that. So Crude the Oil Game is going to be a really big, beautiful production game with beautiful plastic pieces, market-changing in the game so that you can simulate the oil market.
Classic republication, man.
That's one of the things that we started doing.
That's one of your things, classic republishing classic.
Everything else I just mentioned, though, is a new game. That's our reprint for this year. Then I'm doing CO2. So you've just polluted the environment with Crude the Oil Game. Now CO2, you can do green energy games. And that's a big, big buzz. Another Euro game, but a very big buzz on the geek right now as an Essen release. So people are really talking about that game. It's by the guy who did Vinos, who Z-Man did. And you guys, and you know, you've seen that today. You were selling that today.
Yep, I tried hard to steer everyone clear of that one.
Tried my best.
We still sold through a couple games.
It's a brilliant design. And people are really looking forward to this release as well. So, okay, that's Crude. That was CO2. I've got Article 27, which is a negotiation game.
Yeah, I remember reading about that a while ago.
Thematically, that's about the United Nations, so everyone has the power of the veto. So you're negotiating various articles, various propositions that are coming up, and the person who has collected the most influence over the course of the game. And it plays really fast. It's 5 minutes per player, so the game plays really fast from 3 to 6 players. All right, so there's three. And then I got
the price point on that. That's a cheap one.
That's $50, $49.95.
That's just because it's a quick game.
There's
a lot going on, though, with, like, physical stuff.
It's beautiful stuff. It's nothing cheap. You have these huge player screens, probably all these cardboard player screens, so you can, you're keeping the hidden information about what you're hitting.
That's to set it up and play it 5 times in a row.
Oh, absolutely. Yeah. You're going to want to play it, negotiations, screaming at each other about, I'm going to veto your thing if you do this and stuff. So if you like negotiation, it's a pure negotiation. Dan Baden.
Awesome.
You know Dan Baden?
Dan Baden
from down in the Avery territory over there.
Yeah. Yep.
He's the designer of that game. We picked that one up with him at the Gathering last year, and now we'll bring it back.
Oh, at the Gathering.
At the Gathering. The struggle games goes to the Gathering.
Who put you in the book, Bonacore?
Who put me? I happen to know Alan. Alan Moon and I are very good friends. So there. All right. So that was, I think, 8 now. Okay. And then we have the two big games we have for SNR. The expansion for Core Worlds Galactic Orders. So it takes Core Worlds really to that next level where you're now, as you deploy units, you're going to be placing tokens on these Galactic Order cards. And you're going to be able to use these tokens either strategically at the end of the game to get Empire points or tactically in the middle of the game to basically use the influence of these Galactic Orders to get extra, draw extra cards, get extra fleet strength during an invasion, things like that. And then finally, Space Cadets. This is number 10. I'll have an 11th about this.
Can't fucking wait for that.
Space Cadets sounds like it's awesome. Is the basically the cooperative game whereby you're all on the bridge crew of a non-IP infringing starship. Enterprise, excuse me. And you have a captain, you have a helmsman, you have a weapons officer.
Here, let me make this easier for
you.
Because I know you're being professional and diplomatic about
it.
So take Space Alert and make it really interesting with different tasks
jobs
to do.
Yep.
And it's also got all these different puzzles and dexterity things, all this different shit that you have to do. Everybody's doing something different, but it's the same sort of timed. If you don't do all your shit right, everything's going to blow up in your face and fuck everything up.
And exactly. I would like to point out that this game is designed by members of the Fort.
Yep.
The brothers Engelstein.
They're not brothers. It's father and son.
Father and son.
Silly fuck.
Father, son, daughter.
Really?
Yeah, that's right. His daughter.
Oh, that's fantastic.
His daughter is one of my gaming nemesis, sister says.
Right. Nemesis?
Yes. She's been beating me a game since she's about 10 years old. Sydney Engelstein. Awesome.
So Jeff is on the Fort.
Jeff is a brilliant man.
Absolutely brilliant.
Did Ares Project.
Ares Project.
Along with his son Brian.
Yep.
That's right.
Also writes very, very well.
Yeah.
About games, a lot of great ideas.
One of the smartest guys in the world.
Does a podcast? I can't remember the name of it.
Ludology.
Yeah, yeah.
I've been on that one too. On every podcast. All right. So that
Steve
was number
Bonacore, total whore. All right.
You got to promote yourself. All right. So that was number 10. Now the secret number 11 game, which has not been announced, just got announced by White Goblin.
No, you didn't tell anyone. Hot scoops right here.
Well, I didn't. I haven't mentioned that we're doing it though, because it's what I'm about to say. You might assume I was doing it. White Goblin has just announced, and we are also going to do Revolver 2. That does not replace Revolver, because we're going to continue expanding Revolver 1, and the two expansions are like Revolver 1.1 and 1.2. Revolver 2 is going to be another two-player game with two factions. You're going to have that same battlefield mechanic, but after that, the rest of the mechanics of the game are completely different. So you're going to have this other different experience where you're battling across time. You have this poker tournament experience within the game that's going to give you, if you win the poker tournament, I think it's called the All Rivers Poker Tournament, you're going to get special advantages as you move across the battlefields. You're going to have these ambushes that you're going to be playing. So it's another version of Revolver. Both of them are going to be supported going forward because Revolver's done really well for them and really well for us.
Something I really like about everything that you're saying right now.
Yes.
You were really successful to survive. So you're making your money, you're doing things. Now you feel a little more comfortable taking risks. And you're taking risks. You're putting out a lot of different things.
Yeah.
You're putting out a lot of interesting games that are using different mechanics.
Yep.
You know, I mean, you have a deck build, you have this, you have that. You know, you're kind of still fitting in with the stuff, but you're also doing shit that nobody else is doing. You're doing stuff that's weird. It's like good games that you really like and you really believe in, and maybe it's going to be a total dud because, you know, who wants... No, honestly, I don't mean to sound like shitty about it, but it's like you're doing cool shit. You're taking risks. You're not putting out, let me do a zombie deck builder, and now let me do a fucking, you know, Taylor and pressing cube pusher, and you know what I mean? Like you're taking chances, putting out games that are interesting, awesome, pushing the envelope, taking chances on new, interesting designs. Like, we need more people like that. It's awesome.
No, I appreciate really what you're saying. I mean, I'm literally trying to expand the Stronghold Games brand across the spectrum of price points and across the spectrum of types of games. And I'm not going into the Euro market just to get there. I'm picking games that make sense that I've already played. I mean, it might not be for everybody, right? You guys don't tend toward that.
I think we get a bad
rap. Josh, we know. Josh, yeah, we know, is a closet Euro
game. Good game is good game.
We know he is.
I do a really good job of keeping it to myself.
One of the favorite games of the FatCast, both me and Josh.
Both of us. Yep.
Agricola.
Absolutely.
Euro is fuck. And so it's like, you know, like Stag just said, a good game is a good game. And that's how you can tell. The people that are in publishing usually... You know, like Zev is another great example.
Absolutely. Yeah.
Loves fun games. Doesn't want to pigeon, you know, there's no pigeonholing.
Yep.
And I think you're following in a similar, you're not following, I mean, it sound like shitty like that, but you know.
Man, come on.
Well, I mean, really. But
I want to be Zev when I grow up. I tell them that all the time.
Well, no, actually, we were talking about it today at the booth. You know, is Z-Man a Euro publisher? And
no.
Zev's saying, and we're saying, like, no fucking way. And it's like, yeah, sure, Agricola, you know, biggest seller, fine. But, you know, B-movie card game is, you know, kind of where they started out. Shadow Fist. They're all over the place. You know, Zev puts out games that he likes that are fun.
Zev?
You put out games that you like that are fun. And good games are good games, whether it's impressing a tailor with cubes. There's occasionally maybe a good one of those.
That's exactly...
Or, you know?
That's exactly correct. I'm putting out games that I believe in. Games that are just good. I always say, I want games that are unique... And they're good and a best of breed in whatever they are.
And that's
best
the exact
of breed.
Phrase
so
that I use. I love
you know,
that.
You pick a game that is just stands out in what it does.
Yeah.
And that's what Stronghold Games is trying to do. Zev has done the same thing. I give him all the props in the world. You can call me copycat or you want.
He didn't give you very many props early.
Come on, he loves me. We love each other, man. So you pick games that you believe in and that you're going to back and that you're going to promote. And that's what we're doing. That's what I'm doing. What he's done in the past. I jokingly say I want to be Zev when I grow up. I mean, he's done
a
great job doing that.
You can tell.
I'm following that kind of way.
Well, you can tell.
So when I think family games, my favorite family game, what is it?
Survive.
My favorite deck builder, what is it? Core Worlds.
Thank you.
Yeah.
My favorite hidden information espionage game? Confusion.
Because there's lots of those.
Yeah. Yeah.
And
I gotta get genre.
So is there anything you can say?
About
what about some you're working on?
Do we know
you're in discussions with? I mean,
we might as well talk about Dan's game.
That's what I'm saying. Right? I mean, is that a?
Well, there's nothing to report on.
You haven't signed a contract, right?
No contract. And he's got a bunch of people looking at it. But I'll put in props to Dan. This is, can I say full names? It doesn't matter, right?
Dan Raspler.
We have Dan to Raspler. We already talked to him about it briefly.
Right, Dan Raspler and Engineer Al.
Engineer Al, that's a game.
They've got a really interesting design called Spaceman versus Aliens, working title. And we've been looking at it. We've been giving them a lot of feedback on it because we play tested a few times before the convention. I played a couple of times here, gave him some great ideas. So I mean, we're working toward maybe doing something. But he's got other people looking at it too.
That's
so we're not.
One. It's a good.
Oh, it's a really solid design.
Fight
it's
for that, Bonacore.
Very
fight for it.
Very thematic. If they would like standies. To continue talking, we would do the standees.
Yay, Bonacore!
We talked about that.
Yeah.
Let's look a little deeper than this. I mean, so what's part of the process? A guy comes to you and these guys, hey, I want you to look at Game X, and you look at it and you say, okay, this thing's got something going on. What is the process that develops that into a product that ends up on the store shelf? So?
A game is pitched to a publisher like Stronghold Games, and we either see a vision in the game or
right.
we don't, right? So we see a vision like in a game like this. We might ask the designer to go back and take that game and work through it after we've given. We, as in me,
okay.
plus anybody else that's part of my playtest.
Your cabal.
My cabal. Because the ownership is 100% me at this point.
Right.
But anybody that I have in my circle of friends, you know, there's no other people in the company. Circle of friends and playtesters. We give feedback. We've given a lot of feedback to those guys. And they've taken it all to heart. They've done a great job, both Dan and Al. And they've worked through some stuff. And they've come back. And they've shown us something else. And it's gotten better. A couple of times this has happened, and it's gotten better. I'm at the point right now where, like, this is pretty darn good. What I'm going to do now is, if they would like to continue, is take that game, bring it out to a couple of blind playtest groups.
Right.
Say, here's a game, guys. Play this. They've got to learn it without Engineer Al and Dan Raspler sitting there over their shoulders showing them.
I did it recently. I was the first one.
I know. You guys did it. That's right. You guys. Both of you, right?
No. Me and Andy.
I thought you read it too.
No,
I was in on the next game after that.
Okay.
You
read it on your Kindle or something like that. Did you say that?
Well, I read the rules on my Kindle before. Actually, I listened to them on my
Kindle.
Listened to it.
The Kindle talked to you.
Yeah. So that I would have some level of understanding of the game prior.
I was very impressed.
That's coming from the rule book, so that's
I fucking hate reading rules.
Yep.
Yeah, the rule book was very accessible.
I am fucking the worst. I just hate reading
rules. I don't like
rules
either. Yep.
And I read it, and I played it. There were a couple little ambiguities. I mean, a couple little tiny things. But we fucking played it.
It was there.
Like,
yeah.
It was a game.
I had a good time.
I was stoked. Yep. And I'm a shitty friend for having not played it before. Since, you know, I go over there with regularity.
I, by the way, had played it three times by the time Matt Loader got to it.
Look at that. That's a real friend.
I'm a real friend.
I looked at it a few times.
And I live about 15 minutes down the road from Al. So,
you go. So we're going to get it out if they'd like to continue down this road. Get it out to a couple of blind playtest groups. And if we get great feedback from them, or any kind of feedback, we're going to then take back, make some kind of decision, and go to contract.
So something like that, typically, like when you go to the contract process, typically are you looking for, I know some publishers are contracting for mechanics. They don't give a shit about theme. They don't give a shit about artwork. Some publishers are also going to contract with a lot of freedom as far as further developing that rule set. Some publishers go to contract with a much more like, well, this is the game I'm buying. Like, you have to get to approve changes that we make. You know, we're not going to change this theme. It's still going to be your game. We're publishing it. I mean, do you feel like, or not do you feel, I mean, typically are you doing more of a, Steve Monacore is in control, or, well, not, you're always in control if you get to put it out. But, I mean, are you doing more of a, you give me something, and I might change 10% of it. I might change the theme. I might do this. I might do that. I'm going to change stuff. Or are you taking it more like, we're going to do this sort of before the contract. We're going to hammer out the details, finish the game, and then I'm signing contract. This is the game that I'm publishing. We all agree on it completely.
Can you make that question any longer? Okay, let me talk.
I'm a professional podcaster.
Yes, you are.
Sir.
Yes, you are.
I use my radio voice.
Yes,
my
hour.
Yes, you are. That's why you're so good at this. When you sign a contract with the IP holder, designer, in the case of board games, obviously, you're the publisher ends up taking getting licensed, and he gets the rights to do almost anything. Now, you I would talk, like last night, I said, I talked to those guys about things I would do. Some of them they liked, some of them they didn't like. And I, because I said to them, I want to make you guys happy. So if I'm going to make changes, and here he comes, Dan, he's walking around here. If I'm going to make changes that are not going to make him happy, then I don't want to do the game.
You don't want to fight with a guy. Yeah.
So, but while, no publisher will sign a contract such that they get hamstrung. They get their hands tied and they can't make whatever changes they want, essentially. They have to do that. They need that. But at the same point, you want to make, you want the designer on your side because he's going to be evangelizing this game with you, right?
And may have another good design in his back.
That he wants to work with you later,
of
course.
That relationship.
And an expansion.
Dan Raspler definitely doesn't have another good design in his back pocket.
Dan's got all kinds of
came up with
Dan's got all kinds of
great ideas, man.
He's got some great ideas.
I'm completely kidding. Scorched Earth is fucking incredible. And
I know, and I know that another publisher's had that game sitting there for a while, and you know, I've actually mentioned it to Dan that if it ever comes back available, I might want to look at it. Things like that.
So good, man.
I have not played it, but I just keep hearing.
It is fucking fabulous.
Yep.
It is
a whole different world.
It's
a really, really
game. Yeah. It is a serious game, but it is fucking incredible.
Right. Yep. So the long story short is that normally you get the rights and you can do whatever you want as a publisher. I don't want to do that. I want to make sure the designer is happy with anything I'm thinking about doing, so that I can then make him happy and we can all be happy together and publicize.
So you won't be publishing any Kinesias.
I would. It's funny. Every publishing company should have one Reiner Kinesia under their belt because he's got so many games and he should have one.
I think it's really great the way that the Merchant of Venus thing kind of.
Yeah, that's a good thing.
You know what I mean?
Oh, yeah, we should talk about that for a second. That's cool.
No, everything I've said publicly is everything I've said privately. It really is. I mean, we worked it out such that there's a win for everybody in this.
I think it really is.
It was only going to be that someone was going to be able to publish it. You can't have two versions out there. The market isn't big enough to sustain something like that. And the win-win here, right? They get to publish it. Yes, I would have loved to publish it. But now I have a huge ally in the industry. Yep. Christian Peters and I are like BFFs. I mean, literally. I mean, we like, he like says all kinds of great things about me publicly and privately. It's great. It's true.
Try me too, eh?
Yeah, oh, absolutely.
He whispers it in your ear.
Yes, he does.
What other industry can you do this?
Yeah. I mean, he is the single biggest guy in the industry.
Wonder Woman tonight, Steve.
Certainly the hobby aspect.
Actually, in the hobby game, we're talking about hobby games.
Yeah.
Yep. The single biggest person in the biggest company, the CEO of the biggest company. Yep. He's now an ally of mine.
Yeah, that's great.
I got creative consulting on this game such that now their game is going to have my envisioning
of the
game, right? My vision was we're going to do the game the way Rich and Ham want them to do it.
Yep.
And there is the recreation, the reimagining of the game as their designer, Mr. Kuba, did for the game. And by the way, which looks great.
Yeah.
So both games are going to go into that box. It's going to be a phenomenal game. And I get my logo in the game.
Yep.
And I've got a great ally in the issue. So it's a win-win for everybody. And no silly legal stuff is going on.
And it gives permission for everyone to buy, regardless of how they felt about the entire situation.
It really was, I think, aside from you putting it out, best case scenario.
No, it was.
Yep. Because if you want to know, I was on your side of the fence. I really was. But
again,
still, at the same time, it's just like.
But it's about the relationship.
Yep.
It's
about
finding a path to success.
Good stuff.
Thanks, fantastic. Like very professional.
We really
great.
Very nice.
We really tried to do it the best way possible.
Yep.
For everybody involved, and especially the gamers, too. So it worked out very well.
Right.
Did you sugar?
Awesome. Well, I think that probably wraps things up here.
I appreciate the time on the show.
Thank you, Steve, for stopping by tonight, drinking with us, giving us some beer, and talking Stronghold games with us. Everything.
Yeah. Always great hanging out with you guys.
Steve Monaco, I'm going to go out on a limb here. Steve Monaco, I love a lot of other people in the gaming industry.
Yep.
I think Steve Monaco is the most Fat Cast approved publisher in the industry.
All right.
We've
embarrassed
the
man enough.
It's awesome. I love this podcast. You guys do a great job.
And we love you.
And thank you.
All right, I'm just going to fade it out there before things get a little too gushy between Bonacore and the boys. I hope you enjoyed this episode of the Fatcast, live from the WBC, delayed. Stay tuned for part three of our WBC special. Part three will feature interviews with Stan Helinski, a game designer who developed Hearts and Minds and also is well-renowned for his Crokinole boards. We'll also feature an interview with Torben Sherwood from Valley Games, as well as a talk with Grant Dalglish from Columbia Games. So stay tuned. More to come. Thanks for listening. This is Engineer Al signing out.
You've been listening to FatCast. You can find us on the web at fortressat.com.
If you were Han Solo.
Yeah, Han Solo.
And like
that.
As they rescued, as like Princess Leia was like being picked up and she's still in that leather bikini, Han Solo's like, why don't you keep that? Like, I might want that later on, right? I like that Steve Avery is the yardstick of cheapness.
When it comes to liquor, have you ever been to a liquor store with Steve Avery?
Oh, I'm.
He
no,
literally
I'm not,
he tries.
Sure
he looks under the bottom shelf.
Yep.
Yep. He's like, hey, you got anything out back that's spoiled? I'll give you $2 for it.
See.
So I pull out some crazy insane shit, and you're like, no, I didn't do that, but now all of a sudden you're admitting to fat ass brunettes and dirty sex fantasies, because you're like, seems very reasonable in the face of Steve Monacore, cocaine fiend. You're like, no, I'm not a cocaine fiend, I'm just a sex pervert. But I'm doing a very good job here. There's a reason I Monocore, drop to S.
You're not going to be using that.
We're
going to
put that at the end of the show. It's just going to be like, shit.
Hi, I'm Monocore.
Shit. We're going to cut that together. We're going to do a little remix with the auto-tune. Monocore.
All right. Thank you, guys. I'm out of here.
Permanent friend of the show, Steve Monocore.
Yep.
Buy his shit.
We'll also feature an interview with Torben Sherwood from Valley Games and shit.